Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers from the 48-yard line, second down, 13. Brady lobs one downfield, caught ball by Gronkowski, inside the 20, to the 15, 10. Gronkowski to the 5, to the 4-yard line. Holy guacamole.
Third down, 18. Dropping Gannon, looking Gannon, looking Gannon. Those up the middle.
It's intercepted at the 30. Derrick Brooks, 30. Brooks to the 25, 20. Derrick Brooks all the way. There it is. The dagger's in. We're going to win the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl, baby!
This is the big nasty. Yeah, big nasty Hall of Fame Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan, baby.
This is Mike Allstott, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and you're listening to the Cannon Fire Podcast.
Cannon Fire Podcast, brother. You ain't listening, and you're missing out. Woo!
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new edition of the Cannon Fire Podcast, live on YouTube today for episode 228. It is the weekly mailbag edition of the podcast. We are joined by our very special friend and honorary third member of the show, James Hill, a.k.a. Mr. Bucks Nation, yet again. We're going to be answering your Buccaneers questions and responding to some of the takes you guys have sent in regarding the team. And if you want to get on top of things every single week, we are always accepting takes, questions, and more. CannonFirePodcast at gmail.com. You can also always hit us up on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All of those are Cannon Fire Podcast. Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, as always, Rhett Matthew. Joined alongside me, my good buddy and co-host, the Philly Bucks fan himself, Mr. Evan Wanish. And as I alluded to before, that guy at the bottom of your screen there, Mr. Bucks Nation, a.k.a. James Hill, joining us on the show today. How are we doing, boys? How are we feeling on this Wednesday?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me on, as always, guys. Greatly appreciate it. Ready to talk about some Bucks stuff, man. There's a lot of stuff coming out of week 12 versus the Colts, going into week 13 versus the Falcons. So thankfully we'll have a good amount to cover today.
Oh yeah, we got some injury updates for you guys. The latest on Antonio Brown, guys like Aaron Stinney getting placed on IR. We'll talk about all of that and more. And then, of course, your submitted emails and questions and takes and such. We do have a pretty good one to start things off, though. But, Evan, wanted to hear from you real quick.
Yeah, it's actually been a pretty busy day as far as injuries goes and injury updates. So, yeah, we got more to talk about than when we woke up this morning and thought that we were going to be able to talk about.
Well, even this time last week, you know, we were thinking about doing the mailbag show on Wednesday. It's the day before Thanksgiving, and we're like, let's face it, you know, people can send in questions and stuff, but we just really didn't have a ton to talk about this time a week ago. And it's funny because there are certain weeks, even during the middle of the NFL season, where it feels like you don't have as much to talk about. But lucky for us, like you said, man, there was plenty to cover here today. Hey, quick ad break, but let me tell you about our guys over at betonline.ag, one of our main sponsors of the podcast for over a year at this point. From basketball, football, baseball, postseason, NHL, boxing, UFC, right down to your favorite Vegas casino games, do not wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. Head to the new updated desktop or mobile website they have to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code BELIEVE50, that's BLEAV50, to receive your bonus. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports and a proud sponsor of the Cannon Fire Podcast. Let's go ahead and kick things off with our first topic here. And this is one that, honestly, me and James kind of tossed around and ended up being the title of today's episode. But put simply, Can Leonard Fournette be a 1,000-yard rusher for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 2021? We look at what he's produced so far this season. 621 rushing yards, 354 receiving yards. So he's a little over 20 yards away from 1,000 yards from scrimmage, which is obviously a great season for any Bucs running back. Ronald Jones last year was, 22, 25 yards short of being a 1,000-yard rusher, but his level of production was a little bit different than Leonard Fournette. But we look at the games that are left, 6 games left. This is a guy who's already got a couple of 100-yard games under his belt this season. It seems like if he gets one or two more, this could definitely be possible. But I think, you know, we have to give Tampa Bay Lenny his credit here. In my opinion, I might get some flack for this because I am a huge Ronald Jones supporter. Lenny has won me over this season, but I think Leonard Fournette has honestly had the best season by a running back in Tampa Bay in quite some time. Like, I know Ronald Jones was pretty close to 1,000 yards on the ground last year, which was great, but he wasn't a factor in the pass game, right? As much as we hate to say it, as much as it pisses me off sometimes when they throw Leonard Fournette the ball, he's proven that 354 receiving yards over the first 10 games definitely makes him a little bit useful in that aspect. So as far as playoff Lenny goes, regular season Lenny, Fournette Lenny, whatever you want to call him this week, the question is simple. Evan, I want to get your take first. Can he be a 1,000-yard rusher with 6 games left on the schedule?
Well, you know, yeah, it's been 11 games already. You know, and a lot of you are wondering real quick. I just want to get into this because it was on my mind when you mentioned that, before I get into the question. A lot of people were asking why Giovanni Bernard wasn't out there, like, barely at all against the Colts. And a lot of it's because of that reason you said. It's Leonard Fournette has basically taken over. And yeah, Gio Bernard's a nice player. He's good depth, but like we kept saying, oh, they need a third down back because they need a guy who can catch the ball. Leonard Fournette's been that guy. Like he has been. And until he's not, there's not going to be many spots where he's coming off the field on third down. So it's nice to have depth, obviously, and Gio Bernard is providing that right now. As far as 1,000 yards rushing, I think it's doable just because you have that extra game. Mm-hmm. Ronald Jones did not have that extra game. That sucks for him, honestly. Because
Rojo,
if he did,
tail end of the season too, he missed a couple of games due to, you know, the thumb, and then the COVID popped up. Yep. So it wasn't the best scenario for him.
Yeah, and if he had an extra game, he would have hit 1,000 yards.
Oh, yeah.
So it sucks for him, but it does give Fournette a very good opportunity to get over 1,000. Obviously, the Bucs, as we'll talk about in a little bit, for some circumstances, the Bucs' hopes of having 3,000-yard wide receivers, those hopes are dashed. You know, it still is possible that they have 2,000-yard receivers and 1,000-yard rusher. I think that's definitely possible, and it would be impressive.
Oh, yeah. James, your thoughts?
Yeah, I just did the math. You know, there's 6 games left. Let's say he needs 400 yards. Just kind of round it down, or, you know, whatever we need to do. He need about 67 rushing yards a game, which I'd say is pretty doable given how much they've been using Leonard Fournette the past, 2 months and a half, let's say. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been giving him the ball a lot, you know, obviously as a receiver, which, you know, you both talked about. But they're finally starting to run the ball a little bit more, which I feel like's been working. Like both of you guys, I'm a big Ronald Jones guy, but, you know, the circumstances are what they are right now. They want to use Leonard Fournette a lot. I don't see that changing anytime soon. So, yeah, I think it's a definite possibility here. In regards to Fournette having, you know, the best season, you know, in a little bit, what would you guys say? Probably since last year Doug Martin really popped off was the last really good year for running back, right?
Yeah, because
Bucs, they were Martin was never even this consistent in the passing game, though.
I mean, Doug, but definitely not in the passing game, you know, the characteristic.
Yeah, but that's what you're talking about, because if you're not, then you can say Ronald Jones's was good last year.
Right. I mean, the characteristic that Doug Martin had was he would go off on contract years, right? That rookie season, he was amazing. And then once he got that contract, man, that year he was awesome as well. But after that, he definitely disappeared. But yeah, just like you said, Evan, he wasn't a factor in the passing game. And then when you look at the guys in between, you know, a Doug Martin to a Ronald Jones per se, who are the names in there? Bobby Rainey, Charles Sims. Like, you remember when Charles Sims was our pass-catching back? Peyton Barber wasn't a pass catching back. That guy barely got, I don't know, what, 700 yards in a season.
Well, Charles Sims was supposed to be a pass catching back.
He was supposed
to be. He wasn't that good at it. Peyton Barber was never supposed to be a pass catching back in defense of him.
Right.
It's just, yeah. I mean,
who else was in there? Seriously, Charles Sims, Bobby Rainey.
I mean, you got to think, Doug Martin.
Jaquizz Rodgers, he was a pass catching back, all right, huh?
Yeah. they've had an interesting list of running backs. And obviously they tried out LeSean McCoy. If this was 2015, it would have worked.
Shady, let's not knock Shady. He was there two seasons in a row for two good teams to be that moral support role, and he got two.
Yeah, but I also still think, like, I don't know. My take on that is that he was actually better than people think, and like,
oh yeah,
if you would have had to play him down the stretch, it would have been okay. Like, it wouldn't have been ideal, but it wouldn't have been awful either.
I don't remember what game it was, but there was one game I want to say it was against Atlanta, but he had like two carries for 30 yards, and I think that was
against Minnesota. He played well.
I think that was pretty much the only production we saw from him the entire season. Right.
Early on, you saw a little bit.
Yeah. Maybe I'm just remembering wrong. But yeah, man, I mean, as far as the Bucs go and a running back being effective in the passing game, while it isn't perfect, as we have talked about plenty of times, with you look at week one, the Tom Brady interception, a couple of the turnovers that have resulted due to the hands or lack thereof of these running backs catching passes out of the backfield, even though it hasn't been perfect, the fact that Lenny's able to get it done is pretty admirable, and it's a nice change of scenery for this Buccaneers offense. And the fact that he's, you know, taking the three down back position and kind of running with it, pun intended, is, I guess it's a good sign, considering you're going to have to figure out which one of those three running backs you're going to want to sign after this season is over. So I think Lenny has definitely earned his contract, if that's also the nature of the conversation.
Yeah, Danny in the chat said they never gave Shady any opportunities, just like Gio. So here's the difference. Yeah. And then I explained. Last year, Leonard Fournette and Ronald Jones couldn't catch a cold, yet they still didn't really give McCoy many opportunities. This year, the reason Giovanni Bernard isn't getting as many opportunities is because Leonard Fournette has been good at doing his role. So why? Like, it's not like you're paying Giovanni Bernard $10 million. Like, you know, like, I understand, like, people want to see him. Like, he's really, like, as far as veteran goes, he's the only acquisition they made that was from the outside, right? So people want to see him. But if Leonard Fournette keeps doing his job and does it well, why are they going to take him out? So it's a little bit of a different scenario. It's not Gio not getting the opportunities. It's just the opportunities not being available because the other guys are stepping up in front of him.
Right. Yeah. James, your final thoughts before we move on to the next one.
Yeah, just, you know, heck, what a wild ride it's been for Leonard Fournette. You know, me and Evan talked about this at the beginning of the year. It was getting really frustrating where it just seemed like the Buccaneers coaching staff wasn't giving guys defined roles. They were rotating guys in a lot. It wasn't making a lot of sense. You know, you remember that, Evan. We talked about that, I believe, after week one or week two, something along those lines. But now, you know, it seems like they're finally going with the guy they wanted to go with the entire time. You know, they just really didn't have enough good reasons to justify it, but now they do, which is fine. You know, it's Leonard Fournette's playing well. And I, you know, hey, there's a realistic chance that he could get 1,000 yards. And if that is the case, hey, you know, he'll be the first guy to have done it in the past, you know, a few years, right? 6 years, something along those lines.
I want to say maybe more. Doug Martin was the last like 23rd. Do it on the ground for the Bucs.
As far as 1,000 yards?
Yeah.
He did it back in 2015, so it would have been 6 years. So that'd be cool.
Yeah, it definitely would. I think for a guy like Leonard Fournette, it's hard to be upset. Not only when you look at the position that he's been in during his time in Tampa Bay, I mean, how close he was to getting cut towards the tail end of the 2020 season. And then, of course, the way he stepped up in the playoffs and was able to earn the moniker playoff Lenny. And then the hot start he had this season. Like, let's not forget that, you know, this Leonard Fournette production isn't necessarily anything new. It's just, you know, he had a really hot start this year, and we've seen it kind of carry. His production is definitely starting to pay off, but, you know, after a 4-touchdown performance against the Colts, it's almost hard not to talk about a guy like that. But let's give Lenny his roses, because I think this probably isn't a very bold take. I know you've said this before on the show, Evan, but I don't think Rojo's back next year. I'll be very surprised if Gio Bernard is back. So I think Leonard Fournette, given what he's shown us throughout the season so far, has definitely earned the right to be the one running back on the roster after the season is said and done. Aside from, you know, your guy, Keyshawn Vaughn, Evan, I know that's your boy too. You're worried about him getting his reps come playoffs time, but, I think Leonard Fournette has really proven that he deserves to be here.
Yeah. I mean, so I don't know if I would say I seriously doubt Gio Bernard would be here just because they need other running backs. Like, you can't just have Leonard Fournette and Keyshawn Vaughn.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you have three running backs that are free agents. You might bring one back. You might let all three walk. Like, you're gonna, the running back room is gonna look different regardless of who they bring back, or who they let go. Like, it's gonna look different, whether that's a free agent, whether that's a draft pick. We'll see. I think a lot of their decisions will be based on how they feel about Keyshawn Vaughn, and I think that'll base a lot of their decisions on what they do with their current free agents, right? The three running backs plus the running backs that will be available to sign a free agency, yeah, and the running backs in the draft. I think you're going to get a big indicator of what they actually think of Keyshawn Vaughn this offseason, because you go out, let's say you re-sign Leonard Fournette and you don't bring back Gio Bernard and you don't bring back Ronald Jones, but you sign another running back to basically do a 1-2 punch, almost like the Saints do with Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram. You sign a running back like that, that's telling you that there's not a lot of faith in Keyshawn Vaughn. You know what would tell you there's even less faith in Keyshawn Vaughn is drafting one in the second or third round, which I think is still a real possibility, especially if, let's say, it's another one-year deal for Fournette. Let's say the Bucs don't really want to give him a long-term deal. They can't agree on something. They agree on like a one-year deal, and then they still draft a running back in the first three rounds. To me, that signals that Vaughn is just not going to be the guy.
Oh, yeah. Well, Vaughn definitely won't be the guy because this was –
he hasn't earned it at all.
Well, I mean, he hasn't – yeah, he has not earned it. A lot of people are going to tell you what they'll say about Gio Bernard, for example. The exposure hasn't been there. The opportunities haven't been there.
Gio Bernard has shown he's a productive NFL player.
So. The difference in your take between Gio Bernard and Keyshawn Vaughn is, I mean, what you just alluded to right there is you have already said Keyshawn Vaughn is just dog water at this point, right? The guy's got no shot. He's washed. He's done. Huh?
He's washed. Cooked. He's done. He's cooked. Cooked.
But let's say the Bucks sign Lenny, let's say they sign one more running back, and then, you know, it, even if they sign an extra running back after re-signing Lenny, it still, to me, doesn't entirely rule out the possibility that they could be looking for a guy in the draft, which I think just furthers the point you made just then.
Yeah, because I mean, you got to think, if you're signing a running back, and real quick, James, I'll let you speak. It's not just a normal show. You're here with us.
No, this is James' favorite part about doing other people's shows is that he doesn't have to talk.
Yeah, he actually, folks, this is why he tells us he doesn't actually do a podcast, because he just can't talk for long periods of time like that. You know, let's say, you know, if you sign a running back in free agency, and we're going off the rails here a little bit, but we'll get back on track after this. If you're going to go out and sign a free agent running back, it's likely going to be a one-year deal or at most a two-year deal. Mm-hmm. So let's say you do that, or if it's Gio Bernard, it's probably a one-year deal for Gio Bernard. Even if it's Ronald Jones, I mean, even if Ronald Jones somehow has some interest in coming back, which I don't know why you would, and the Bucs have interest in keeping him, it's probably not going to be a long-term deal. So you got to be thinking you could be in a very similar situation the next year, which in that case, they could possibly draft a running back. You're right. There's a lot of names. One of my favorites, early on favorites. So you're already getting the draft talk here. If you guys love the draft, you're going to get one of my favorites in this class on the mailbag show here. So Kyren Williams from Notre Dame. It's one of my favorites in the class. Just an all-around good player. Could be available in the second round. I don't think he's going to sneak into the first. No pun intended there. Haha. But I don't think he's going to end up in the first round. So he should be available in the second round for him. He won't be available in the third, but he should be there in the second. He's just solid at everything he does. He's able to pass, protect. He's able to catch the ball. He's comfortable with it. He's done a lot in Notre Dame. And I just think he'd be a nice guy to sort of take a shot on and see what you got.
Yeah, really quick in the live chat before I get your thoughts, James, our moderator holding it down, the man himself, Willie Beeman, says, I totally agree with Evan here. Oregon running back CJ Verdell would be a nice compliment to Lenny. That guy is lightning in a bottle. Do you have any thoughts on him?
Yeah, he's a solid player. I haven't done a full deep dive into him yet, but, you know, yeah, I think you could be looking at, especially, I mean, if you sign a, you know, I always think that you should have the days of the bell cow running back are almost over, I think. Like, there's very few, right?
I mean, there's very rare exceptions, which is a guy like Derrick Henry. But when you look at history of bell cow backs, none of those guys are 6 foot plus, 200 and something pounds, dragging defenders behind them.
Like, it's just, it's, you know, it's different nowadays. It's just, it's a different league. You're using more than one running back on game days. And I think, yeah, they got to find a guy to, even if they give Leonard Fournette a 1 year deal, if they give him a 4 year deal, you got to find a guy who's going to be able to compliment him well. That's, you know, you can't have a guy with stones for hands, because what if Leonard Fournette doesn't have a great year pass catching, right? Yeah. You need to have that backup plan. So I think a guy like Verdell would be smart. Like I said, Kyron Williams, and I mean, there's a few other running backs. There's a solid running back class. It's not as deep as it's been in years past, but it's still a solid class with some intriguing players.
Yeah. James, your thoughts really quick on just the state of the Buccaneers at running back as we look towards the future, and then we'll get into some news.
Yeah, I think it's probably safe to assume that out of all those guys, they'd want to bring, you know, Fournette back the most. You know, Ronald Jones, like you guys said, he really has no reason to stay at this point. You know, I'm sure that there's other teams that he could go and get opportunities with to be a starter, you know, maybe like the Houston Texans, you know, and maybe some of the other teams that are out there, like maybe the 49ers, if they have an opening, and just some of those other teams in the league. In the case of Gio Bernard, you know, maybe they bring him back, just like what Evan said, is to have that insurance, to have that guy who can catch the football just in case Leonard Fournette can't do it 1 year. You know, you have that guy, you know, Gio Bernard, I believe he's only 29, so he could still have a couple more years in him. So I would say that, you know, it's not a foregone conclusion that a guy like Ronald Jones is gone, but it's definitely more likelier than not that he would go look for opportunities elsewhere. And I imagine the Bucs would want to bring back Leonard Fournette. I mean, the coaching staff loves him. They obviously put a lot of trust in him to be like an entire three down back for him. But at the end of the day, we'll just have to wait and see what happens there. So, yeah. But yeah, it's exciting times for Lenny.
Oh yeah.
Which is good.
I can't remember the last time there was this much buzz around the Buccaneers running back room. And the fact that we have so many storylines to come off of this week of all weeks is, you know, pretty good. Always makes for good podcast content, which is exactly why we're sitting here doing it. But let's go ahead and move on to the latest Tampa Bay Buccaneer news. We have got some injury updates out of One Buck Place. The first one is regarding wide receiver Antonio Brown, a guy who has been week to week for, God, like 6 weeks now, 5-6 weeks. It feels like he's been gone for over half the season, which he kind of has, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's he's going to end up playing the same amount of games that he did last year, pretty much.
Right.
Yeah, he's been out since week six against the Eagles.
So which Antonio I don't know how he finished week six then, because he injured it around the third quarter and still finished the game. So
yeah, but Antonio Brown suffered an ankle injury in that game against the Eagles, and apparently over the weeks it has spread to his heel. A report came out today from Adam Schefter that said he's basically set to miss the next two games. Of course, the Buccaneers have this week the Falcons going for the sweep in Atlanta, and then after that, they are back at home against Buffalo. So as of his situation right now, you know, obviously the Bucs want him healthy for the playoffs, first and foremost. Like, you can look at the tough games left on the schedule, but the Bucs can win every single one of those games without Antonio Brown, in my opinion. I think if this offense gets going, we've seen that they can put up plenty of points on people. So you want him healthy for the playoffs, but you look at the situation that he's in, how much time he's missing, how it is escalating to a worse injury than initially thought. You know, how much of this is the Bucs like being cautious too? Because there is that belief, or at least that underlying feeling that, yeah, he's missing a lot of time, but the Bucs are also trying to be as careful as they possibly can. Is that just, you know, kind of the conundrum we found ourselves in here, Evan, as we look at Antonio Brown's situation?
Yeah, I think they have to balance it. They have to do a good job of balancing it, of when you want him back versus when he's ready to come back versus when you need him back. I mean, I think there's differences for all three. They obviously want him back this week, right? Can't come back this week, but do they need him back this week? Do they really need Antonio Brown to be able to beat the Atlanta Falcons? No, like they don't. That being said, it'd be nice. I mean, it would be nice. Antonio Brown killed the Atlanta Falcons last year in both games. Wasn't as productive in this year's game in Tampa week two. But, you know, it would be nice, but they don't need him to beat the Falcons. I mean, I saw a few people say, oh, he's going to miss the Bills game. You know, like they might need him there. Maybe. I mean, the Bills are a good team. But like,
Bills are a good
you
team,
need
but
like is... I mean, I would understand if Antonio Brown was your number two wide receiver, but when you have Mike Evans and Chris Godwin there and Gronkowski's back, like, do you need Antonio Brown there? Like, we do you want Antonio Brown? Do you need him though?
We do have a good question about Mike Evans and Chris Godwin in this offense coming up in the mailbag later on. But James, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, like Evan was saying, like I would even take it a step further. Like, need is a strong word. Right. Need is a very strong word. And, you know, Evan said if he was the number two wide receiver, if he was the number one wide receiver, you know, you would need him, you know, but he's their third guy. And I think getting Scotty Miller back also helps out a lot. You know, I think more than what people are realizing. So that's an important thing to consider. Now, does it suck that he's out? Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm sure Tom Brady would love to have him out there. He's you know, a favorite target of Tom Brady's. But Tom Brady also very much likes throwing to Chris Godwin and Mike Evans as well. You know, it's literally like before Antonio Brown came along, people were still saying Mike Evans and Chris Godwin were the best wide receiver duo in the NFL. So, I mean, you know, you still have that to consider. But yeah, it does suck. I imagine I completely understand where people's frustrations are coming from with this situation too, because man, this is like the fourth or fifth week in a row where it's like, oh, there's a little bit of hope.
All right,
he
should be back the game after next.
Yeah, and then it's never materialized. And, you know, I've talked about this earlier on in the year. All three of us have actually, I think here on the channel, where we've talked about the idea of like, you know, what's going on with the Bucks in terms of them judging players' injuries and things along these lines and like, I don't know. This is just another kind of weird situation for me. You know, Bruce Arians came out today and said, oh, you know, the injury's different than what we thought it was. And it's just kind of like, what? You know, how did
they can't predict the future. I mean,
I understand that, you know, and Jenna Lane asked a question where it was like, you know, in hindsight, would you have put him on the IR? And Bruce Arians said, you know, yeah, we probably would have.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at a guy missing three games minimum, when you're on a roll like the Bucs were after they beat Philly, you know, it's pretty critical at that point because you want to keep winning games, right? You want your offense to keep playing at the level it is. And some of these guys might be playing through some pain, but when you take a step back and you look at the big picture, now that the Bucs are 8-3 without him, like, yeah, hindsight's going to tell you that Bruce is like, yeah, we should have just put him on IR. But it's one of those things where like, I think trainers can only do so much based off of also like what players tell them, right? So if Antonio Brown says, hey, I'm feeling good enough, I might be feeling good enough to play next week, well, they're going to go off of that assumption until he shows up to practice and they can clearly see he's not ready to go that week. Or, as we might have alluded to at the start of this topic, it's just the Bucks being a little extra cautious because even though Antonio Brown had ridiculous production out of the gate this year and he's proving to be a favorite target for Tom Brady, a safety outlet, this offense can still run without him. And you want your offense to be running its best in the postseason. So in my opinion, as I kind of take a look at this, and then I'll toss it back to you, James, I think, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's just a little bit of everything. It's a little bit of the Bucks being cautious. It's a little bit of like, you know, initially, yeah, they probably didn't think it was that bad. And then it spreads and then the injury changes. And, you know, that's all week to week stuff that they don't have control over. But I think as far as Antonio Brown goes, I'm almost 100% ready for him to be back in the playoffs. I think everybody is. I think he'll probably get some action in before the postseason. But yeah, I don't know. Like, some people think he's, you know, going to end up in jail and that there's serious things happening aside from just an ankle injury, which is why he hasn't been playing. But I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think anyone on the show thinks it is. So we won't speak on it very much. But, you know, as far as AB goes, I hate to say it this way because I don't want to sound super harsh, but it's almost like the Bucks don't need him until they do, I guess, is a way to put it. I don't know. Maybe you can make some sense of what I'm trying to say.
I don't think it's a harsh way of putting it because we've talked. Heck, Evan said this, you know, I believe when the signing was made where it's, hey, this is a luxury, you know, and it is. at the end of the day. You know, again, need's a strong word. At the end of the day, do the Bucks need, they 100% need Antonio Brown out there? Not necessarily. Do you want him out there? Of course, everybody wants Antonio Brown out there, but do you need him out there? He's not your number one. He's not your number two. He's your number three guy, you know? So it's not as big of a need, you know, but I do understand how people are frustrated and they want him out there. I totally agree with those frustrations. Let me ask you both this, you know, with Schefter reporting that Brown's going to be out this week, he's going to be out the next week. At this point, do you just maybe put him on the IR, have him rest up so you can get that open roster spot and promote a guy like a Breshad Perriman or a, you know, another, bring in another wide receiver just so you can have another body available?
No, I don't. Just because it is, I think he's going to be, he might be back. You know, I think he'll be back soon. I just don't think they really want to do that. It's not just as simple. I mean, you can only put a guy on IR for so long, and then you can only put him on there for so many times. And that goes into their original decision to not place him on IR originally. Obviously they have regrets about not doing that, but at the time, you know, they're thinking, okay, maybe this is a, you know, maybe this is a situation where he's only going to miss two games. But, you know, and obviously IR wouldn't end the season because it could be, you know, three games minimum, right? So that doesn't mean the season. IR doesn't mean what it used to. But, you know, I at this point, no. If you would have said around the bye week or so, maybe. I mean, then he'd be almost ready to come off of it now. And I just don't see what difference that makes. Nobody seems to be picking up Breshad Perriman. Nobody seems to be calling his line. They have Scotty Miller back. So even if they lose Perriman, they still have the deep threat there. I don't see much point in doing it. It is nice to have the roster spot. And I'm sure they would have done it eventually. But at this point in the year, I mean, I know we keep saying it and we talked about it earlier, but Brown is closer to a return than he is not, right? Like he is. I do believe that, like Rhett said, I believe he will be back in the regular season before the playoffs. I don't think they're going to just throw him out there for his first action in 3 months in a playoff game. I think he'll be back maybe in a week 16, maybe or so. That's in, you know, another 3 weeks or so. He's going to be back sooner rather than later. I know it's obviously frustrating because you thought, okay, he might miss. You were looking and they, you know, missed the Bears game, missed the Saints game, but then they had the bye week and he should come back versus Washington, right? And he hasn't been back. Looked like he was progressing. Wasn't ever really expected to play versus the Giants, but it really looked like maybe versus the Colts. But if not versus the Colts, it was definitely versus the Falcons.
Yeah.
And now it's not either one of those. And now it's most likely week 14 as well. So I get the frustration. But I do think he's close. He is close. It's just, you know, all about, you know, like we talked about them being cautious versus, you know, I mean, they need to get him reps before the playoffs. Don't think that's fair to him to throw him into the playoffs. Are a different animal. I mean, they are a different intensity. It's just, it's a totally different thing. And I just don't really think that's very fair to him to put him right in a playoff spot. So I do think they're going to play him eventually in the regular season. Again, you will see him. It just won't be within the next 2 weeks.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the biggest thing about all of that is the fact that they've been winning games without him. Getting him reps in the regular season is definitely going to happen because he's not going to see his first action in a playoff game after three.
Well, I mean, now what? Like now, said. Now their record without him is what, 500 now, right? It's 3-3.
Yeah.
Their record's 3-3 without him this season. So,
yeah, it's a shame because as we talked about at the beginning of the season, all the hype behind 3,000 yard receivers, it really seemed like this could be the season. Antonio Brown looking like the Antonio Brown of old. That connection between him and Tom Brady was on fire. And, of course, this offense is harder to defend when he is out there on the field. So getting him back for the playoffs is going to be the most important thing on the Buccaneers' schedule. But, of course, finding the time to get him some reps in the regular season to get him back into shape is going to be important, too. But that all factors into how your offense is playing come the playoffs. I think you want your offense to be playing the best they can in those weeks coming up to the postseason. And if you get Antonio Brown back 3 weeks before the end of the season, I'm okay with that, especially if he's out there getting reps and he's being productive like he was before. But you know, just another interesting situation to monitor as we take a look at the Antonio Brown injury. Further injury updates for Tampa Bay. Big offensive lineman Aaron Stinney, who was able to step up a little bit in this week's game against the Colts. He was placed on IR with a knee injury, but the good news there is that the left guard he was replacing should be back. Ali Marpet is back practicing this week, so that's always a really good sign for a guy who had kind of a vague oblique injury, I think is basically what it was described as. But it's good to see Ali back out there and getting some reps. So with a guy like Aaron Stinney ending up on IR, they're probably going to promote somebody else, it seems like.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, they have obviously Nick Leverett there.
Just for depth's sake.
Yeah, they have Nick Leverett there. They like him, obviously. He got the game ball. Played okay. Like, he played fine. Pass protection was rough, but, I mean, run blocking-wise, he wasn't bad.
I believe he was the lowest-graded player for Tampa Bay
that's PFF not really
this
fair.
Week. It's not that's... fair. He's a third-string left guard filling in for, you know, a former All-Pro going up against DeForest Buckner.
Yeah, well, people on Twitter want to say he's terrible. So, you know, I mean, I guess I'd love to see those people on Twitter. I'd love to see them line up against DeForest Buckner.
All right, yeah.
I thought Nick Leverett overall did a pretty good job.
Well, you think every player on the Bucks does a great job. But, you know, they got, like we talked about, right? They got a 53-man roster of all-stars, man.
Yeah, nothing but all pros. I mean, all 53 of them going to the Pro Bowl this year.
The Pro Bowl roster is just Bucks. It's just the Bucks roster.
Yeah, the NFC team is nothing but Tampa.
Yeah, so, I thought he played fine. Like, he was fine, whatever. I mean, and especially given the circumstances, yeah, kudos to him. I mean, that dude's not expecting to play. I mean, you know, so he'll be the backup. Maybe they do. I think, obviously, James, we talked about it, I think, before the show. He mentioned John Moshon as a possibility. Maybe, you know, maybe it's an extra offensive lineman that they bring in there just in case something happens. You never know, but it's definitely a good sign that Marpet was back practicing this week, because Grady Jarrett is a really good football player and they're going to need to contain him. The Falcons don't have much else as far as their pass rush goes, but Jarrett is a beast. So,
yeah. So some more injury updates for Tampa Bay. This one in the secondary, which has probably been the position group that's just been hurting the most. I mean, literally this season, it has been nothing but injuries back there, but Carlton Davis, the number one cornerback for Tampa Bay. His window to return to practice is open, but he hasn't officially been activated, so it's not like he's taking up a roster spot right now. But when people talk to Bruce Arians, he says that there is a good chance he plays versus Atlanta. Now, as far as what that means for Carlton Davis, that's pretty big, because alongside him, cornerback Jamel Dean avoided missing some serious time, as it seems like he's really only dealing with a bruised shoulder. He went down against the Colts and was ruled out for the rest of the game. Did not return. Anxious to hear an update on that. And it seems like he's going to be good to go. So if Jamel Dean and Carlton Davis is officially activated this week, this could be the first time since week one that we have seen Carlton Davis, Sean Murphy Bunting, and Jamel Dean on the field together. So obviously it's a pretty big week for this Buccaneers secondary, contingent mostly on what's going to end up happening with Carlton Davis, but a positive update nonetheless.
Yeah, real quick before we get James's take on this. It's actually really interesting. So last week was the first, believe it or not, okay, last week was the first time, this is per Greg Allman, it says, when Bucks started Jamel Dean and Sean Murphy Bunting at corner Sunday versus the Colts, it marked the first time all season they started the same combination in consecutive weeks. First 10 games was 10 different starting combinations at corner / nickel. Here it is week by week. The first week, it was Davis and Sean Murphy Bunting. Obviously, Murphy Bunting went out. Second week, Davis / Dean. Davis, Dean Cockrell. Davis, Sherman Cockrell. Dean, Sherman. Dean, Sherman Cockrell. Dean, Delaney Cockrell. Dean DeSeer, Dean Delaney Edwards, Dean SMB, Dean SMB. So
that's wild, man.
Yeah, definitely crazy. This is the, I mean, we're late in the season, and I don't know. TB12 Goatman says, sorry guys, don't think we get Dean this week. He was full participation today in practice, so I, you know, that's a pretty good sign. He's good to go. So I mean, unless something happens, and you know, we don't know, but he was a full participant today in practice. And Bruce Arians said during beginning of the week that Carlton Davis hopefully is ready to go in Atlanta. So
yeah,
there you go, James. I was waiting for you.
Oh, it's tough for me to get cues sometimes.
No, you're good.
Yeah, no. Finally, right? Jesus, we've been waiting long enough for this. Now all we need is Coach Sherman on the headset and everything will be perfect in the world, you know? But like,
real quick, how about Coach Sherman this week, man? There was some video came out at Buccaneers practice, and I'll tell you, this is where a signing for, you know, a guy like Richard Sherman, while a lot of people might not have been too happy about what he was able to bring to the field, which in the grand scheme of things was not very much. But the fact that, you know, this signing pays off in more ways than one. He's doing a lot of coaching out there at practice and, you know, helping some of these younger guys with their P's and Q's. And that's awesome to see from a guy like Sherm.
Yeah. You know, I think that, you know, Sherman's just I really hope he reconsiders coaching in the NFL and he just kind of pulls an AQ Shipley and just kind of transitions to a coach for the Bucs. But, yeah, this is great news. I love Carlton Davis. He's still my hashtag number one corner. That's awesome. Jamel Dean. You know, he had a rough start to this year, but I think he's doing a lot better than people have been giving him credit for, which has been good. And then, you know, SMB, of course, you know, he's been struggling, you know, a little bit. But, you know, that first game he came back from injury was great, you know, and then
he was fine on Sunday.
Yeah, no, given the circumstances, it's good. It's all good. You know, I think this is nothing but positive news. Given just how this freaking year's been, man, you know, with these cornerback injuries, like Evan was saying, you know, a different combination every single week, even throwing Mike Edwards in there at slot corner, which has, you know, honestly been pretty good in certain situations.
Yeah.
You know, so it's great news. This is excellent to hear, you know?
Yeah. So, taking a look at the rest of the injury news for Tampa Bay, that's actually it. I mean, there are some other guys who popped up. I think Mike Edwards missed a little bit of time at practice, or he was limited. Devin White also kind of nursing an injury, something that he initially left the Colts game for. So a couple of other guys to kind of monitor throughout the course of the week. But as far as, you know, people who were going to play in this Sunday's game, it seems like everything is, you know, right on track as it should be, aside from the guys that we mentioned making their return this week. So again, just another thing to mention as far as Buccaneer news goes and something interesting to monitor throughout the course of the week. When we do our game preview show later on this week, we'll probably have an update on some of those injuries for you guys. So stay tuned. We'll keep you up to date with all the latest. So as I mentioned 40 whole minutes ago, believe it or not, this is the weekly mailbag edition of the show. So I figured we should finally get to some emails, right? I mean, we got a few good questions here I think we could get to. First one comes from our good friend Emily Compa, and the subject line is "When Hope Replaces Doubt." And I really like this one to kick things off because it's not so much of like a question more than it is a take. And I think it's a take on just Bucs fans mentality, I think is a good way to put it. Basically just a take on the state of fans today for Tampa Bay, whether they are Brady sexuals who have converted over to Tampa Bay, or they are, you know, people following the Bucs for other reasons. I think this one's pretty good. So Emily says, "I don't know if everyone will get this one, but as a Bucs fan in this household, we used to glance over at each other when they were down double digits to any opposing team because we pretty much knew the game was over. But now there's this aura that we will overcome any lead that is put upon us. Bottom line is we are completing a very difficult puzzle that has taken time to put together. We have found certain pieces that we were missing before. The puzzle has not yet been completed, but the image is now visible. At 8-3, we are looking pretty good, but need to continue fitting on those final pieces. Thank you, Emily." So thanks again for your email, Emily. Always good to hear from you on the mailbag show. But I think this, you know, mostly has to do with just where this Bucs team has obviously come from. You know, you look at this team back when they were 8-5, and what, in 2016? That was the year they went 9-7, if I remember correctly. 2016, they went 9-7. Like, they were an 8-5 football team, but that 8-5 football team is a hell of a lot different than, God forbid, hypothetical here, if the Bucs lose their next two games and all of a sudden they're 8-5. It's a hell of a lot different to have, you know, an 8-5 football team with Tom Brady at the helm coming off of the Super Bowl championship than it is with Dirk Cutter being your head coach and Jameis Winston as your quarterback. there's just certain things that this team has gotten better at, and overcoming losses and deficits like the one that they found themselves against the Colts, I think, is a major trait of this team. And this just speaks to how, you know, they're never really out of any game. I think we found that out in 2020 when they were behind huge to Justin Herbert, the rookie. I think that was his first start too. He was tearing us up, man. But they
this
were
is his second start. Yeah,
they were behind
24-7, and then yeah. and then they were down to Atlanta mm-hmm. in Atlanta, 17-0, which is the exact opponent and the exact location of this week's game. So,
yeah,
and that was the game. The Atlanta game is when you can point to really the change in the offense. I think you can point to, you know, the halftime of the Atlanta
halftime.
Game.
We talked to Bradley Pinion about this, man. Like that was almost the turning point for that entire season, because it seemed like they were just pissed off and tired of getting beat after that moment.
Yeah. And then, it really seemed to be to turn around. So, I think it's because of the veterans on this team. I mean, you've got guys, you got two guys right there that were a part of the biggest, most epic comeback in NFL history. So they know how to get the job done. They know that when you're down 13 at halftime, they know the game, it needs to be better, but they know the game's not over, right? Like they know what needs to be done in order to win the football game, and what that's doing to these younger guys and even the veterans that were on this team but hadn't experienced it, like Levante David, like a Ali Marpet, like a Mike Evans, those guys that, it's like you said, when you were down 13, the game was probably pretty much over. I mean, occasionally, Jameis would make some wild plays and you'd be able to come back.
Oh man, those but were most the worst of the time, too, when they came back and they couldn't finish either. That was another difference.
But most of the time, it'd be done. And this, with this regime and the coaching staff, the experience on the coaching staff, the experience of Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, Antonio Brown, even guys like Jason Pierre-Paul. I mean, these guys, the Dominicans too, like they know the NFL inside and out. They know that just because you're down doesn't mean you're done, right? And there's a big difference between being down and being done. And I think that's why, you just have so much experience and so much veteran leadership now that, they truly believe that no deficit is going to keep them down.
Yeah, for sure. James, your thoughts on just the evolution of this Bucs team over the years. And, like Emily said in her email, we just kind of take a look at the big picture of how far they've come from what they were before when it was, Tampa Bay branded losing football.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the change started last year, like you guys were saying, that they're obviously the defending Super Bowl champions now. So this was something we were talking about last year too, and it all changes with, the captains, the leadership, when your quarterback at the helm is a guy who, is proven that he can come back in games and proven that, like, hey, even with double digit deficits, you still have a chance to win this football game. It changes the entire mentality of a team. Heck, even players on the Bucs, have admitted that, mm-hmm. Where that change has kind of come up. So, it all kind of matters about proving it. Tom Brady, he's proved it for many, many years. So just getting a guy like that on your team, that's already a boost, but like what Evan was saying, there's other guys on this team, that have championship pedigree, that have been to Super Bowls, won Super Bowls, that know what it's like as well. So getting, and I feel like that was definitely part of what the Bucs were trying to do. They brought guys in who raised the expectation, because that's what you need to do. Obviously, a couple of years ago when you were running a team that hadn't won anything in the longest time, your expectations are going to be low, and it's going to be really hard to not be pessimistic in those situations. But, once you get people in who have proven otherwise, your expectations raise up, and that's what I think it's all about.
And as we kind of wrap up this little retrospective here, I'll give my two cents. I think, the change that you guys have talked about, the change started when they signed Brady, the change started halftime in Atlanta. Sure, we can look at those points as changes for this team, but I think the change started when the Glazers signed Bruce Arians and he was able to come in 2019. I think the change started the day that they hired him in 2019. I think 2020, they finally got the tools that they needed to finish making that change happen. And we actually saw it happen on the field, right? Because stuff like that with any football team, it takes a long time. Like, you can have a good game one week and a terrible game the next, but you're not all of a sudden just going to become a Super Bowl contender overnight, right? It takes a little bit of time. But as far as this change in culture goes, I think it started when they brought Bruce Arians in. I think they pretty much put a bow on top when they signed Tom Brady. And then once they figured everything out, halftime at Atlanta 2020, it leads you to 8 straight wins, the longest winning streak in franchise history, and a Super Bowl title. So really good take from Emily, as always. And it's always good to, you know, just take a step back and look at how far we've come. Because for the people who have watched Bucks football for a number of years, know that it hasn't always been peaches and cream. But, you know, we're out here weathering the storm, 8-3 in 2021. I'm cool. I'm happy. Still chasing the one seed in the NFC. It's December football. It's starting to count for real. Like, I'm very happy with where we are. But every now and again, it definitely is important to just take a step back and look at how far you've come. Let's get to our last few questions here for the Mailbag Show. This next one comes from Tony Saylor, a.k.a. Tony Baloney. I don't know if he's in the live chat tonight. I wish he was, but this is a pretty good question, and I'm going to toss this one to you, Evan. Tony asks, why can't the Bucs ever seem to scheme open Mike Evans or Chris Godwin? You look at teams like Green Bay or anyone who has a one featured wide receiver, and it seems like that guy is always open. Is it play design or is it player execution? And in Tony's words, because of course Tony Baloney would ask it like this, is it play design or are Mike Evans and Chris Godwin overrated? Evan, I'll give it to you.
Well, it's a little bit of both, you know, as far as execution goes, not the overrated part. but it is, you know, it is a little bit of both, play design and execution. It's, you know, you can't blame coaches 100% of the time. You also can't blame players 100% of the time. You know, there's a few. I think football is one of the sports where coaching like seriously matters. Baseball managers, what do they actually do? Like, they do stuff like managers do a lot of stuff behind the scenes, like in baseball, basketball. Now,
when you use the title manager too, especially when you look at how they're used in baseball, it's like a very practical sense. Like when you think of a manager at a grocery store, what do they actually do? You know,
make sure everybody's just doing their job. Like,
exactly.
Yeah. So basketball, like, make your shots. Like, if somebody gets hot on a certain night, there's nothing a good coach is gonna do. Like, you know, hockey's just the game of bounces. So football is the one where, like, coaching is can make a huge difference. And if you have elite coaching, you're never going to be out of games. You're always going to be competitive no matter what team you have. You know, I mean, some of those Patriots teams, like, they were not good. Like, I don't even think this Patriots team is that great.
Yeah, but look at them this year. Exactly. They've won, what, 7 in a row now?
Yeah, because, I mean, they have great coaching. They have a great system, and it matters. So, yes and no. It does have a little bit to do with scheming the guys open. But no, because, yeah, and also, like, the players have to execute. Mike Evans has to get open. Chris Godwin has to get open. I will say that it's certain offenses, right? Bruce Arians' offense is more – a little bit new school, but it's also more older school. It's not as new school with the RPOs and all this other stuff.
Not a lot of the pick, you know, plays and stuff.
Yeah, it's not a lot of that. It's more old school in that sense. It's new school, obviously, because, like, you're pushing the ball down the field. But it's old school in a sense that, like, they're not going to be doing all this fancy stuff to get the ball into Mike Evans' hands. Because, you know, their goal isn't to have Mike Evans have 11 catches at the end of the game. That's not how their offense is going to run. That's not how any Brady offense is going to run. So I think it's a little bit of both. Like I said, it's not a huge deal. Like, I just, I don't know. I guess, like, people think just because, like, you don't get 10, 11 catches and a touchdown a game, that you're just not a good wide receiver. You know, I don't know.
Well, and let's look at, you know, really quickly what a guy like Mike Evans is good at. Mike Evans is good at catching the football. Of course he is. He's a pretty good route runner. But, like, when you compare him to other receivers in the top 5 in the NFL, people are going to look at them differently. But what is Mike Evans good at? Scoring touchdowns, man. And if I'm not mistaken, He is number one in the NFL for receiving touchdowns, if not top three at this very moment.
I think he might be tied. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like the production isn't there. There was one point in this season where we were looking at the three wide receivers who all had over 400 yards throughout the first quarter of the season, realistically saying that these guys could all have 1,000 yards. And obviously, when you have the talent that you do spread out on this offense the way that it does, production like that is insane. But, you know, I feel like you say something like that in the same vein of, you know, Devontae Adams in Green Bay getting 2,000 yards this year. Like, obviously, that's not something that's going to happen when you have all of these weapons on your offense. At least you hope that's not something that would happen, because if Mike Evans or Chris Godwin had 2,000 yards, I think the Bucs would have a terrible record by this point. But, you know, it's just one of those things where I do think people almost overreact to this in a sense, because let's face it, the Bucs are winning games. They're 8-3. Like, you know, like it's not going to be perfect. And I think maybe a lot of the people who were expecting Tom Brady to throw for 55 touchdowns and 5,000 yards this year might be a little let down by it. But I think a lot of people who were realistic about how this offense runs and then also watches the games and sees how situational football can be every single week, like it wasn't very realistic that a guy like Tom Brady, not because it's a guy like Tom Brady, it's not very realistic for any quarterback in the league to consistently just throw 3, 4, 5 touchdowns every single week, 300, 400, 500 yards every single week, and literally on the receiving end of that, his receivers putting up ridiculous numbers. So in a sense, as long as the Bucs are winning games, I kind of don't care how open Mike Evans gets. And I don't even think Mike Evans cares how open Mike Evans gets, as long as the Bucs are winning games. So, yeah, I think that's my take on this one. James, we'll toss it to you.
It doesn't matter. We've had a bunch of games where Mike Evans went off, but they lost, and you just never remembered it. So
right. But James, your thoughts on this as we start to wrap things up.
Yeah, just, you know, it's what happens in these offenses, you know, that are run. You know, you have this many weapons, the ball is going to get spread around, you know? I mean, in teams, defense's game plan around stopping Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, you know, and that forces Tom Brady to go to other weapons like Leonard Fournette, Rob Gronkowski, Cam Bray, some of these other guys. You know, the Washington football team did it, and the Indianapolis Colts did it, you know, because those guys are the top two weapons, healthy weapons currently in this Buccaneers offense. And that's, you know, you game plan to stop that if you're an opposing defensive coordinator, which creates opportunities elsewhere. You know, there's a reason, you know, Bruce Arians comes out here and says, like, man, it's not even fair that Antonio Brown's going up against these third cornerbacks, because defense are still, you know, they're trying to pick their poison here. And
you can't stop at all. So
right. And more times than not, you know, they're going to try to opt to stop Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, because, you know, at the end of the day, when those guys do get the opportunities, you know, whenever they're not getting game planned against, we've seen them do really, really good things. So I don't know if it's necessarily it's tough to scheme guys open. You know, it's tough for guys to get open whenever defenses are really, really dialing in on, you know, on those players, you know. Right. So that's what I think it comes down to.
Well, also a lot of it, real quick, James, sorry to cut you off. Sure. No, but, you know, a lot of teams are playing a lot of man against the Bucs because they know that Brady picks apart zone. Like, yeah, you're just like, Brady just will pick apart zone. Like, he's going to be able to see it. He's going to be able to see it pre-snap, and he's going to know exactly where to put the ball. He's going to know what zones you're in. Like, he's going to know. So just defenses aren't doing it as much this year. Yeah. And that definitely hinders it. You know, can always scheme guys open so much when they're getting played man to man, you know, and the corners are pressing on them. You can only scheme them open so much. So a lot of it depends on the coverages that the Bucs have gotten. Recently, the Bucs have been getting a lot of coverages that take away the deep ball and are only leaving underneath stuff available. And it's been a lot of man-to-man. So they've had to adjust to that for sure. But,
and I think, you know, when you also look at the strengths of this receivers and what these guys do well, given the circumstances, when teams are game planning against Tampa Bay like that, and they're forced to try and, you know, make some passing game work underneath, Mike Evans isn't the best at that. I mean, Chris Godwin's good, but he's not the best at that. You know who on this team in the wide receiver room was probably the best at that was the guy that we just spent 20 minutes talking about, Antonio Brown. So that's just where different strengths and weaknesses in the offense come and go. And like you had alluded to, James, you know, when guys like Mike Evans aren't getting double teamed, they're able to make plays. Even if it's one snap, your guy on defense makes a mistake. Look at the Washington game. Mike Evans is going to make you pay down the sideline because he had that opportunity. Brady saw it was there, and they made it happen. It's as simple as that. So when a guy like Mike Evans doesn't put up 100 yards and, you know, he's kind of quiet for the day, the first thing people go do is look at the tape, and then they look and see if he was double-teamed the entire afternoon, because that's usually what happens in a situation like that. But just want to say really quickly, thank you guys for the great discussion today. All of the great questions this week on the mailbag. I think this was one of the better mailbags we've had in the last few weeks. I think it also helps that we had so much to talk about like we did today. But hopefully we covered everything we needed to. Brought you guys some injury news, all the latest out of One Buccaneer Place. Of course, we'll have more updates on that later on the week in the game preview show, and even had time to answer a few questions. So, ladies and gentlemen, with that being said, I think that's just about going to wrap things up for this week's episode of the Cannon Fire Podcast, brought to you by our good friends over at betonline.ag. Huge shout out to everybody hanging out with us live here on YouTube. Our buddy Frank G, Brady is Mahomes, Daddy, Ty Will, Globe, Mr. Scorpio, TB12 Goatman, and of course, Willie Beeman, the moderator holding it down, Tony Baloney. I think Emily Campo was hanging out with us for a little while as well. Appreciate you guys. Anybody else that I may have missed, you are truly appreciated. Subscribe to the channel if you have not already. Plenty of great Buccaneers content throughout the course of the season and beyond right here on youtube.com/CannonFirePodcast. Follow the show on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All of those are Cannon Fire Podcast. Best place to go for updates on the show. And of course, Buccaneer news as it happens. Before I forget, James, thank you so much for coming on the show again, my man. For the people who do not already know, where can they get a look at your content?
Yeah, thanks for having me on again, guys. Greatly appreciated. I'm just here on YouTube, Mr. Bucks Nation. Still making videos, you know, actually just started a new series today. Very excited for that. And I'll have a couple more videos coming out before the week 13 matchup versus the Atlanta Falcons. So stay tuned for all that. And yeah, thanks.
Heck yeah, man. Also, follow my co-host Evan on Instagram and Twitter. You can find him on Instagram at Bucks_daily, the number one Buccaneers fan page on Instagram. You can also find him on Twitter at EvanNFL. Last but not least, you can find myself Instagram and Twitter at Redicus, RHETTAKUS. If you follow me, I will follow you back. But that's it, folks. Thank you once again for checking out this week's episode of the Cannon Fire Podcast, brought to you by our good friends over at betonline.ag. We will talk to you guys later on this week for the game preview show. It is another divisional matchup for Tampa Bay, as this time they travel to Atlanta to attempt the sweep against the Falcons, a team who have not beaten them while Tom Brady has been here. So how about that? Maybe they can keep that rolling and make that record 4-0 during the TB12 era in Tampa Bay. We'll get you all of the information on that game and, of course, some injury updates later on this week. I'm your host, Rhett Matthews, signing off from my co-host, Evan Wanish, and our special third member of the show. Can't forget about him, Mr. James Hill, a.k.a. Mr. Bucks Nation. Glad to have you here, buddy. Thank you guys for listening this week. We'll catch you later on. Until then, and as always, go Bucks.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.